Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, pontificate, just shut up. Why won't you listen? Why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Well, hello, everyone. It is afternoon in the lower 48 states, so good afternoon wherever you are. Welcome to the first Spouting Off episode of 2018. It's January 9th, 2018, and I'm your host, happy to be back, Karen Cataline. You're tuned to BBS Radio Station 1, and I hope you had a marvelous holiday and a marvelous new year. My, oh my, is there a lot to look forward to in 2018? And we're going to be right here with you. I had a terrific vacation. I got to drive cross country with my partner, who happens to be male, in a baby camper. That's what we call it, the baby camper. And it was a blast. So I got to drive back. I didn't get to drive there because I had to fly in. Long story. I was doing AM talk radio and having a wonderful time as well. So we drove from Florida to the middle of the country, roughly, Colorado, Wyoming. And it is always fun to travel on the road and talk to people and get a sense and a lay of the land of other parts of the country. There was one of several things that happened. I was taking a break, or so I thought, from politics. Hard thing to do, to take a break from politics for me, but I thought it was important to do that because there's so much that's going to be happening, and it's already happening now as we see. So I walked into a truck stop. They're the best places to park your little baby camper. And they're 24/7, and there's always some action going on there. And so I was having my coffee at a lovely 4 o'clock in the morning, and there was CNN and MSNBC on. Actually, I don't know which one. There was only one TV, but it was CNN on the television, and they were talking nonstop about crazy, insane Donald Trump. And it's just been a year of constant vicious attacks of Donald Trump. And I didn't say a word. I didn't bring up politics. I did nothing of the sort. And what happened? I decided to turn my back on the television so I could concentrate on thinking about something other than politics. And a nice gentleman walked past me, and without any provocation, he said to me, "Those people on television, they are the only reason that they're so angry and attacking Donald Trump is because they're mad he's the best thing that ever happened to this country." So I put out my hand and shook it, and he shook it back. And I said, "I hope that you tell a lot of people that." He said, "Oh, I do, every chance I get." So boy, you go away for a week or two, and there's a lot going on. We have some little bites of big issues, as I like to say, and they are big issues. These days, everything is. But just a few little comments before we get to the meat, shall we say, of our program. So while I was gone, a book dropped called Inside the White House. I don't even know the name of it, but it's a book. I have it written down as the Wolf Book. And I may just have to write an editorial called Crying Wolf, because it's yet another attack on Donald Trump. And it's fascinating. We are going to talk about this at length, not the Wolf Book, but it's fascinating how many attacks and in a variety of different ways the left has made on Trump. It's historic in its proportions, and they don't care if it's contradictory. The most obvious, glaring one is that this Wolf Book, I don't want to give it any extra play. Everybody knows what it's called. It said that Donald Trump really didn't want to be president, and he and Melania were terrified that he might actually win. And Melania was crying that she might actually have to live in the White House. That's apparently what the book suggests. Well, for a year, they've been claiming that Donald Trump has been colluding with Russians and he colluded with the Russians to win the election because those Russians didn't want Hillary, who sold them 20% of our uranium. And they pocketed $145 million. No, those Russians, they wanted Donald Trump to be president of the United States of America. And so Donald Trump took advantage of colluding with the Russians, which, by the way, would not be illegal even if he had done it. But he didn't do it. He didn't do it. So all at once, he's both dying to be president and terrified of being president. Of course, then they use the term, then one of the most despicable, one of the most loathsome things I've seen them do, and that's saying something, is trying to claim that the president is now mentally ill. And that is going to be one of our main issues for today. I'm going to dive right into that soon. It's so difficult to know how to even begin with such insanity coming from people who've decided that it's their job to diagnose a president of the United States because they're so desperate and paranoid that he is affecting policies that they so desperately disagree with. And of course, we've been saying all along on this program that it isn't just that. They also are terrified because they are being found out. They're being exposed for the phonies and the corrupt hacks that they are. So we will be talking about that. Here's something I'm not going to talk a lot about, but I'm going to mention it. And that is Steve Bannon. You know, Steve Bannon, I had real high hopes for him. And I'm going to defer a little bit of judgment here because I can't quite tell with all of the media lies and goings on exactly what's going on with Steve Bannon. First, he's the greatest supporter of Trump. Then he's colluding with this wolf guy. And now he's trying to rehabilitate himself. I really don't know what's going on. My concern, and I do have a concern, is that Steve Bannon seemed to be the hope for the grassroots, or at least so we thought. And here we have a Steve Bannon who, from all accounts, has been stabbing Donald Trump and his family in the back. And now he wants to get in their good graces. Good luck with that. Donald Trump is a good maker-upper, but not when it's this blatant. He'll talk to anybody, but that doesn't mean he's going to let you back in the fold. On the positive side of this, I think so many people just don't get Donald Trump, never have, and we're beginning to see who this guy is. Do we like everything he says and does? No. But the things that other people, the white-gloved Republicans, don't like about him, most of that stuff doesn't bother me at all. What I do think is good news is that people have attributed those who have the ear of Donald Trump to be his ghost whisperers, I guess you could say, that people were very, very concerned about who has the president's ear and who's influencing Trump. It appears after almost a year, and we'll celebrate his first year in office soon. This is the 9th, so it's coming up on the 20th. It's a year of lefty insanity that we've been watching. I think part of what is emerging for anybody who's paying attention is that Donald Trump, while he does listen to everybody, he does seem to remember his campaign promises, unlike a good many Republican and Democrat politicians who had no intention of keeping their promises. Donald Trump actually believed the things that he told those thousands of people in various crowds across the country. He actually believed them, and he remembers his promises. He remembered his platform. form. And so those that think that it required a Steve Bannon or somebody else to influence him to keep him on the straight and narrow, I had those concerns only insofar as Donald Trump probably didn't know the inner workings of getting a bill through Congress and some of the minutia of Washington, D.C. I am reminded of a criticism that is often made of lawyers, and that is that lawyers keep things necessarily complicated so only they can understand it, so only they can be needed to decipher the legalese in which we write things. That gives them an enormous amount of job security. And I think that's true in Congress, who they are so far removed from everyday citizens that they actually believe that only they and their cronies can continue the corruption in Washington. I think that is Trump's greatest threat to them, is simply that he's not of them, he didn't come from them, and he's exactly what we ordered the people in America who were not being listened to. Talk about not being heard. You know, Hollywood, that's going to be my other issue, is always talking about being heard. Well, the American people were not being heard. Donald Trump was listening. So I think that he's exposed the fact that going to Congress, even being president of the United States, does not require that you be in politics for 40 years unless you've been on the public dole for 40 years. And Donald Trump has not. So I'm going to be watching the Steve Bannon thing as we move forward. I'm less and less concerned about it, but I think that everyday citizens are going to have to step up. Well, they already are. We already are. I'm not going to sit here and say that those of us who've been watching and involved and concerned and cheering on this unique president are not involved. We are. But the grassroots is constantly getting challenged, and we're going to be challenged again in 2018. Another little bite of an issue. I guess my point here is going to be that it may not be the big issue that Jeff Sessions wants it to be. And that is, Jeff Sessions seems to have suddenly awakened from his slumber and is trying to tighten the marijuana laws federally. And a lot of people have taken issue with that, even conservatives who weren't all that crazy about marijuana legalization are now taking on Sessions, like Colorado's Cory Gardner, who never met a U.S. Chamber of Commerce dollar that he didn't love. As you know, Colorado has recreational marijuana, and it has been a mixed bag. I have fairly strong small L libertarian leanings. I don't think it's the government's job to tell people what they can put in their bodies. I think if people put things in their bodies, I'm not talking about heroin here and hard drugs, but if people put things in their bodies that cause them to do illegal things, then they should be prosecuted for the illegal things they did, not because they might commit a crime. It's a very slippery slope that we come that we're on when the government, which it does all the time, tries to protect us from ourselves. That's not how you learn, and that's not what freedom is all about. On the other hand, if you are someone who appreciates smaller government, if you're a person who appreciates the evils of big government, and that the real reason that we believe in lower taxes is not because we're terrified to pay a dollar more, but because we need to starve the beast. And the beast is big government that steps on our rights, steps on our freedom, steps on our self-determination. And how do they do that? By empowering, enriching themselves. Remember the Outer Limits? I date myself, but there are lots and lots of science fiction shows And often there are these evil monsters that just keep getting bigger and bigger and more enriched because they suck the blood of others. Kind of like Dracula, I guess. And I'm sorry, except for some of the things that government can do better that individuals can't do for themselves, like maybe making treaties with foreign countries and having borders and protecting people, citizens from criminals who come here illegally and other things that the federal government is doing a lousy job of. It is not the federal government's job to tell us what we ought to put in our bodies. Liberals never met a mandate or a law that they didn't love. So they're always fond of telling us how to live. And so here we are with Jeff Sessions and the marijuana piece. Apparently, Jeff Sessions is not real happy with he's always been a social conservative. He doesn't like marijuana. And Obama put out an executive order to make it easier for states to go ahead and make marijuana legal. So Jeff Sessions woke up on the marijuana issue. I think he's been sleeping. I don't know what he's doing. Everybody's watching to see whether he's just doing things behind the scenes. But I concluded that if Hillary had sold marijuana to the Russians instead of uranium, maybe he'd be paying more attention. Because I'd like to see Jeff Sessions go after Uranium One, to go after the FBI and a whole lot of other issues. So watch out for that. And finally, the thing that's coming up soon seems to be, and by next week there'll be something else, DACA and the wall. Most people are speculating. That's all they ever do with Trump, because if you haven't noticed, Trump doesn't like to tip his hand. What he likes to do is watch other people speculate to get an idea of where people are coming from. But then he goes and he does what he thinks is right. If he thinks he can't get something passed, he'll make a deal. But in this case, people are speculating that Trump is going to have to give DACA, those dreamers who are, let me see if I can remember the thing of DACA, which I can't offhand. I should have that, but I don't. And the wall. People are saying, do you think he's really going to build the wall? Well, he's going to have to legalize those dreamers because that's what's going to get him the wall. So be on the lookout for that, because why should a president with a Republican Congress, winky winky, have to give up something in order to enforce the rule of law? Ask yourself, why is that necessary? I don't know. All right. So among the issues that we're going to really tackle in depth as best we can in the time allotted is going to be, did you watch the Golden Globes? Well, I had to force myself, and I kept turning it off throughout because I knew I'd hear about it, but I also knew that it was going to have some significance, and I knew that I was going to have to have, I was going to have a lot to say about it. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk a little bit about Oprah, which the media went bananas over on Monday after Sunday's Golden Globes, and then we're going to talk about Trump being insane. What I love about these issues, this is why I'm drawn to them, is because they speak directly to areas in which I've actually had some professional experience. Those of you who've been listening to me for a while know that I was indeed a professional actress and singer, and I lived in New York and in California. Couldn't wait to get out of California. And people will ask, well, did you do huge things? No, I didn't do huge things. I made my living as an actor on and off, actress on and off. And for those of you who may know that I wrote a book about my stage mother on steroids, I performed for many years. So I had a firsthand glance at some of what goes on in Hollywood. So I'm drawn to those things because I think it has such an impact on our culture. And where politics and showbiz meet, which is absolutely everywhere today, we're going to talk about that. And then Trump being insane, is also in my wheelhouse because I have a master's in social work from Columbia University, and I'm practiced in the field of mental health. So I want to talk about that because I'm horrified at the lack of a bottom of the left. So before we do that, if you have some thoughts of your own, I want to give you a way to get a hold of me now that we are live on January 9th. You can get a hold of me at 888-627-6008. Or you can call direct 323-744-4831. Give me a call. I'll stop my monologue to talk to you. Otherwise, I get to spout off for the rest of the hour. But I do love callers, and sometimes we get them, sometimes we don't. And it's always fun to find out what's on your mind. So I watched the monologue of the Golden Globes, and I knew what it was going to be about. We were given a little bit of an advance notice that they were all going to be wearing black. All the women were going to wear black because they're starting a new protest. They're going to protest sexual harassment, and they're going to wear a little pin that says, "Time's up." And, oh, it's going to be so great. And meanwhile, there was this setup, it looked like to me, that Oprah gave a long speech codifying how beautiful and wonderful it was to be wearing black, all the Hollywood elites leading the rest of us to appreciate and to raise awareness to the problem of sexual harassment and sexual abuse. The funny thing is that Hollywood was the very entity that introduced us to this. And because it's impossible for pampered Hollywood celebrities to show humility or to say they need to learn something new, they're going to do whatever they can to preen and morally lecture the rest of us, assuming that we're even less intelligent than they are. Oh my God. All right. So I had a couple thoughts about this. And all I can ever say about Hollywood, and I watch these award shows. It's funny because I used to watch these award shows years and years ago when I was in show business. And I must say that I was usually kind of just taken away on this fantasy trip years ago when I'd watch the Oscars or the Golden Globes or whatever. Today, I am struck by the level of commitment towards superficiality that these folks do. It's something that I watched, that I lived in for a time. And I'm amazed, just amazed at how they can take the most, whatever issue it is, they can turn it into a contrived, pedantic, shallow show. That's what it is. It's a shallow show. Everything in Hollywood is for show. And when I studied acting, which I did in undergraduate school, actually got a degree in music theater. Unfortunately, the rest of my education suffered because I didn't study anything else. But I did study a lot of acting. And the big thing in acting, because that's what it is, it's acting. But the whole focus to be a really good actor is that you have to look as natural as possible, right? That's how you succeed as an actor, is to act like you're natural. This is what they taught. So what we have is honest acting. They actually used to talk about that too. They'd say, well, you know, I liked your performance, but it just wasn't honest, you know? It wasn't honest enough. I'm looking for honesty here. George Burns said acting is all about honesty. If you can fake that, you've got it made. So that is what we're dealing with. And when you're in an industry, and that's what they call it, the industry, that elevates acting and phoniness and telling stories, playing different parts, and not being who you are. By the way, that's one of the reasons I lost interest in acting, because I got tired of saying other people's words. I wanted to say my own words. So actually, what I'm doing now is the joy of my life, because, you know, for better or for worse, I'm speaking my own words and you're either agreeing or disagreeing. I'm not expecting you to put me on a pedestal. I'm not expecting you to turn me into a god. I'm not expecting you to just sit passively, although sometimes people do, and decide that I'm better than you are because I'm on stage and you're not. So what's interesting when you watch these award shows where actors who are constantly rewarded with wealth and recognition and celebrity are then congratulating themselves even more, congratulating each other constantly. This is what's known as award season, you know. Award season is just one award show after another, and the celebrities get a whole bunch of bennies just for showing up. Now, if ever there was a group of people that didn't need any more rewards bestowed upon them, it is the childish, morally bankrupt actors of Hollywood. Now, yes, that's a generalization. There are people who've managed to be sane, but we all know that Hollywood exports some of the ugliest, nastiest, and most corrupt values ever. A lot of people around the world think that America is like Hollywood because that's what they see. So these are the people with the highest suicide rate, the people with drug and alcohol problems up the wazoo, the people that elevate violence, sexual abuse, some of the most disgusting trash that is put out as entertainment, are lecturing the rest of us about how we all ought to be more socially aware of sexual harassment. The casting couch is alive and well in Hollywood, and it is the very nature of Hollywood, as I've said on this program before. Now, what do you make of this Time's Up pin? Are they talking to themselves? Because they're the ones who've decided time's up on them. When Bill Clinton was not just harassing and abusing women half his age in the White House, but was credibly accused of rape, actual rape. Because see, to the left, they don't know the difference between asking someone for a date that doesn't want to be or rape. To them, it's all kind of the same stuff, all right? So what was my thought? My thought was that the moral superiority and phoniness of Hollywood telling us the time's up, I think they're talking to themselves. I think they're deciding that time's up on them. Let's see if that is truly the case. Oh, by the way, I have a couple of quickie sound bites too that I wanted. I don't know, our friend Doug, behind the glass, so to speak, did you happen to get my little sound bites there? Doug. Yes, he did. He's typing me, yes, he did. Okay, so I want to play the first one. This is about what's the reason why they're wearing black. And this is Emma, the actress who played Beauty and Beauty and the Beast. She is just so beside herself. Okay, go.
Wearing black in solidarity. It makes me really emotional, actually, thinking about the fact that this movement that we've put together is across industries, it's across communities, it's across spaces, it's It's such a show that this issue doesn't just affect women in Hollywood. This issue is affecting women everywhere, in every country around the world.
Yeah.
It is global, it is systemic, it is structural, and we're all joining together in that tonight to amplify this message.
Having women in Hollywood shine a light on this issue and stand in solidarity with a whole range of activists is absolutely amazing, because what it does is it says, this is really important, you can't look away anymore.
You know, it is standing side by side with other like-minded people who believe in justice and dignity for all. It's really simple. This is not an end-all be-all. You know, it's not a solution to a very systemic problem.
Let's turn that off. The first two were they were just so full of themselves. They take themselves so seriously. It's structural. It goes beyond systems. I just hope that finally these people have been exposed so that we laugh at them instead of taking them so seriously. I have never seen such a bunch of preening, phony people. The thing that really bothers me the most is that they think that they are doing something by putting on another show. Just as Obama thought that by making a speech, he was actually doing something. Now you see, we have a president who actually is doing something and he is being judged on his results. And this is what the left is so worried about, is that there are actual results coming down the pike. We're going to talk more about the Golden Globes, Oprah, and is Trump insane? Does he need to be put in the loony bin? We're going to have all of that and more. We're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we'll have more of Spouting Off.
Hi, I'm Elaine, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is Hillsdale College President Larry Arnn on the importance of the presidential oath of office.
Members of Congress and federal judges take an oath to the Constitution, but the Constitution prescribes the exact words of the oath only for the president. The American presidency was a new and powerful office created at the Constitutional Convention of 1787. Nothing like it existed in any other constitution in history. It was designed to allow certain virtues, decision, activity, secrecy, dispatch, things like that. And they were thought to be essential to executive power, especially in a crisis. But despite this immense power, the president is not so powerful as the Constitution itself. That is why presidents must pledge to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, and why it is the duty of the people to ensure that they do so.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To join the national conversation on the Constitution, go to constitutionminute.com.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
And we're back. This is Karen Kathleen. If you on the very first episode of Spouting Off, January 9th. We were talking about the Golden Globes, and I don't know if you watched them. I had to keep turning them off because I couldn't handle the level of hypocrisy and cognitive dissonance. I really have been a student of cults. I think that liberalism is a cult, and I have an article on my website. By the way, you can go to my website at www.karencataline.com, and the last name is spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. If you know how to spell my name, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. That's as much social media as I can tolerate, but that's enough. And on that article I have on the in-print section of my website, I wrote down a lot of similarities between cults and liberalism. And the model for the cult that I was using, and I've studied a lot of them over the years, has been Scientology. Scientology is taking an enormous beating right now from someone who I think is doing spectacular work, Leah Remini. And she's actually getting accolades from Hollywood for doing it, which I think is also kind of interesting because Scientology has sucked up to Hollywood for years and used Hollywood celebrities to push Scientology on others. Scientology as an organization is guilty of all kinds of crimes that they should be prosecuted for. We'll see what happens. So Elizabeth Moss, who got an award for a woman-centric film, a TV series, excuse me, that all the women are crazy about because it's about women who are basically owned as property and chattel. And I guess they think that's still the case today because the left can never recognize progress anywhere. Especially when there's a political agenda and a narrative to push. So Elizabeth Moss, who happens to be a Scientologist, didn't stop her from preening once again about her support of the movement, of the Time's Up movement, and how very, very proud she was to be wearing black. And here she's part of a cult that either she doesn't know, or it speaks to her gullibility. And that was put on Facebook quite a bit. The NARAL was tweeting, by the way, how wonderful it all was. By the way, before I get any further, if you had a drinking game of how often race, gender, all the favorite leftist groups were mentioned, LGBTQXRYZ. This is really all they've got, the left. And Hollywood is a collectivist haven for such things. You would be drunk in the first hour if you were playing a drinking game every time it was mentioned. People of color. It is so unfortunate that these celebrities supposedly got there by being individualists, and yet they are part of a collectivist notion of humanity that says that we all must march in lockstep when it comes to what you think and feel about things. Case in point, Oprah Winfrey. Now, you probably have been hearing for the last 2 days straight, wall to wall, Oprah's the next president. NBC declared her the next president of the United States. All fancy about news media being fair and balanced has gone right out the window. And Oprah was very, very sure to make what could have been a political speech about how the press is under siege. Really? Really, Oprah? The press is under siege? So I guess the left believes that if you criticize the press, no matter how corrupt and biased they are, spinning yarns with no evidence, smearing presidents in order to get them impeached when they were duly elected by citizens who actually were, I don't know, registered to vote and voted. I don't think the press is under siege. But for Hollywood and for Oprah to think that the press is under siege merely because we have a president who calls them out for their lies is fascinating to me. I think what's most fascinating is leftist philosophy requires that if you're for something, you must make it a victim. If you're against something, you must make it a demon. You must make it evil and terrible that we can't even hear from you, talk to you, listen to you, or anything. Now, remember long ago, it wasn't so long ago when the left was preaching to the rest of us how important it was not to stereotype people. You shouldn't use racist stereotypes to refer to people because that would make you a racist. Unfortunately, they never apply their rules to themselves, ever. They get to do all the things that they accuse the rest of us of. It's maddening. You can't keep track of all of this hypocrisy. We probably need a new word for it because it's just too much. So let's think about this for a moment, okay? Oprah now at this juncture has said she's flirting. First she said that she was considering it, then she said she wasn't, then she said she was. Probably she just wants to stay in the news because as long as more stuff comes out about whether Oprah Winfrey is running in 2020, a full 2 years from now, she gets people talking about her. She knows how to play the media as well as Trump. Maybe not as well, but pretty well. So think for a moment what an Oprah Winfrey presidency would look like. Just think for a moment about that. I have a name for the Oprah Winfrey presidency, and personally, I hope it never, ever happens. I think that she would indeed be a formidable candidate, unfortunately, because people are still prone to celebrity worship. Now, years ago, I really liked Oprah a lot, like a whole bunch of people in this country. She was a phenomenon when she did her program years ago. Unfortunately, Oprah, I'm telegraphing here, Oprah did a very good job of hiding her very strong feelings against white people. And that's the truth. I'm not exaggerating. She went to Reverend Wright's church. Yes, that Reverend Wright, the Reverend Wright that Obama's went to for 20 years. Now, Oprah did leave the church, but I think it was not because she disagreed with what Reverend Wright was saying, because she said as much. She said things similar to that already. She left the church because she probably knew, this is conjecture on my part, I always like to say that up front, she knew that it would be bad for her career because Reverend Wright wasn't exactly mainstream, you know, GD America and Americans' chickens are coming home to roost and it's Whitey's fault. Everything is Whitey's fault. Just to give you facts so you know that I know that there's something to back this up. Oprah Winfrey was promoting her movie at the time in Great Britain called The Butler. And she was asked if Americans oppose Obama and his policies because they're racist. She said, yes, that's why. That's why. You know, they oppose his policies because they're racist. She went on to say this. There are, quote, there are still generations of people, older people, who were born and bred and marinated in it, in that prejudice and racism, and they just have to die, unquote. That is what Oprah Winfrey said. I believe that in order to make the billions that she's made off everyday Americans, she hid a lot of these very hateful feelings towards white people. And I'm not one of those people that thinks that you can't be a racist if you're black. I think that if you lump people together as a group, which is pretty much what the left does, then that's the very definition of racism. But the word has been overused so much that it means next to nothing. It doesn't mean anything. Here's another little sentiment that Oprah had. Shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. And that is that in her magazine, she did a 10-page expose on Palestinians as victims. It was, here it is. All right. Actresses were, okay. Forgive me. I got lost here. Oh, the movie O steers, the magazine O steers readers toward the view that only Palestinians are victims, advising that donations be made either to Oprah's Angel Network, which gives money to programs that prevent Palestinian children from becoming suicide bombers, or to UNICEF, which runs summer camps and trauma programs specifically for Palestinian children. Readers were not encouraged to support organizations that assist maimed and traumatized Israeli girls, or Jews or Christians or Muslims alike, the victims of the suicide bombers, whose cause is not apparently considered worthy by the magazine. So only Palestinians can be victims, just like only whites can be racist. This kind of intellectual laziness gets frustrating. It gets tedious. It really, really does. So we have one more soundbite that I want to get to before I change the subject. And that is just to remind you that Hollywood is all fluff. Hollywood is for show. It's all illusion. These shows about we're wearing black and we're going to change everything. It's utter and complete nonsense. Oh, and I wanted to say what the Oprah presidency would look like. It would be called the Obama presidency because it would be a third term of Obama. That's the punchline to everything I was just leading up to. And here I left the punchline, and that is Obama. Switch the O and you've got Oprah Obama. There would be no difference between an Oprah presidency, God forbid, and the 8 years that we just got through living through. She would appoint the same people. There would be the same policies. I'm sure that Obama would be one of her trusted advisors to tell her what to do and how to spy on her political enemies, as he did to Donald Trump. All of that and more would be in an Obama presidency. I don't have time to play that last sound. Well, yes, I do. It's really short. This is Meryl Streep in 2008 extolling the virtues of somebody else who has fallen from grace. Are you ready, Doug? Go for it.
I just want to thank my agent, Kevin Uvain, and God, Harvey Weinstein.
That's Meryl Streep on the moral high ground telling everybody that Harvey Weinstein is God. Now, here's how they can get away with such incredible cognitive dissonance. Because if due to one speech of Oprah Winfrey in 2018, the entire media machine and the left can get behind Oprah Winfrey as president, the next president of the United States. No vetting, no nothing, no questioning about anything after they just got through saying that Donald Trump is not fit to be president because he was a reality TV star. As long as She's their reality TV star. It's okay. As long as she doesn't have any background to be president, it's okay. So they make a lot of snap judgments very, very quickly. And when you make snap judgments one way, you can make snap judgments the other way. Have you ever known people like that? If they're the kind of person that's flighty and says, oh, you're the greatest thing since sliced bread today, but tomorrow you're dirt. There are people like that. It's called borderline personality disorder. That's what it is. And that is stock and trade of Hollywood. That's what Hollywood is all about. They can ooh and ah and go crazy for you one minute. They can call you God and it's okay. And deep down, you know that Harvey Weinstein is a very bad guy who's manipulating women, and you're supposed to be a champion of women. But of course, he's for abortion. So really, it's okay. But at the next minute, you can be wearing black and telling everyone that their time is up for ignoring this issue when you were the one who was ignoring it, right? So you got to look at this. We have to look at this for what it is. I think that when you're dealing with an illusory world of Hollywood and fantasy and people who are living in an alternate universe, shining the light of reality on them is probably a great weapon. It's funny that Oprah, one of her much touted quotes was that she loves the media and the press because they shine a light on corruption and lies. Now, meanwhile, they didn't shine a light on the corruption and lies of Obama, only on the minutia of Trump. Let's get into that in our last few minutes, and I really have much more than I have time to talk about here. But I'm utterly horrified by this notion, and this is something that the Crying Wolf book also is putting out there, that Donald Trump is now mentally ill. Have you been keeping score? Have you been keeping track of the number of attacks and charges against Donald Trump in a year? Could all of them be true? Well, the fact is none of them are true, because you have to consider the source. They have been jumping up and down with their hair on fire for the last year, and they don't care if any of the charges are contradictory, as in, he wanted to be president. No, he didn't. He was desperate to be president. He was colluding. No, he didn't want to be president at all. He watches 12 hours of television a day. Meanwhile, the only thing that they are unwilling to pay attention to, or frankly, what all this pettiness is used to cover up, are his actual results. Economic optimism in this country is at a 17-year high. There are lists and lists of Trump's accomplishments. That is what he's going to use to convince people that these charges are false. So, gee, how could this insane, crazy man who watches 12 hours of TV a day, who drinks 9 Cokes a day, I guess, who's a racist and a bigot and a white supremacist and colluding with the Russians and wants to be president but doesn't want to be president, how could he be so effective as a president? That's what I want to know. And why is it that the left, who can't wait to get rid of him, doesn't care that the country's doing better under Trump than they did under 8 years of Barack Obama and probably 4 years of Bush before that? See, the fact of the matter is they don't really care if Americans are doing well, because to them, they must get rid of Trump at all costs. It doesn't really matter. The idea that they are more compassionate than you and I is nonsense. It's nonsense. So just don't buy it. I didn't even get to this horrible, horrible Yale supposed psychiatrist who wants to force a psychiatric examination on our president, but she's never talked to him. Now, in mental health terms, that's malpractice, to say nothing of the fact that One of her problems with him is that he speaks violently. She doesn't know the difference between violent words and violent actions. If you think that politics has completely taken over every field, well, it took over the mental health field a long time ago. If you want to meet more lefties than anywhere, find them in social work and in mental health, and they're politicizing their profession. It is a disgrace what they're doing, and they deserve to be called out on it. I don't know to what extent they will be, but watch this carefully, because everybody got the same memo. Everybody got the same memo. These folks are not interested in protecting American citizens from criminal aliens who broke into our country. That was one of Trump's promises. They're not interested in putting they aren't against putting people on welfare and food stamps and encouraging them to be dependent on government. They're really not against putting they don't want to see people go back to work or drain the swamp of corrupt politicians on both sides of the aisle, or maybe stopping the lies that they are telling us so they can get elected. You know, this is a threat. America doing well. Think about this. I'm going to leave you with this because I got to go. But think about an entity, a left and a Trump-hating Republican establishment who is so threatened by Donald Trump that they don't want America to do better. They would rather mock the president because he is a unique president. It's really disturbing. I want to thank Doug, my producer. And please go to my website, www.KarenKataline.com, for more. Talk to me on Facebook at /KarenKataline. /KarenKataline? Yeah, that's what it is. Or Twitter, @KarenKataline. I'm always Twittering something. And if you want more Spouting Off, there will be a lot more Spouting Off next week on Tuesday, either 2 p.m. Mountain or 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific time, where Hollywood resides. And we're going to have more Spouting Off next week. Thanks for joining us.